Today on Talk About That, John argues with his wife about breakfast and mails someone a book only to have it returned a year later. Meanwhile, I ponder why certain movies just appeal more to men and then later sob like a baby at an internet video. Also, a conversation about narcissistic leadership and self-awareness. Today's episode is not sponsored by the QR code, the greatest comeback story of the pandemic. It's go time.
Welcome to another episode. I'm here with the myth, the man, the legend, Johnny W.
You said the myth first. I think it was the man, the myth.
I thought it was the myth, the man.
The myth doesn't come first.
Johnny, it does with you.
First, you're just a man.
You are.
Then you're like, I was a myth.
Is it the man, the myth, the legend? The man, the myth?
The man, the myth, the legend.
I don't know, man. I don't know, myth. I don't know, Johnny. I don't really do words.
No.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't.
You have.
Colloquialisms are not. It's not an easy word to say.
It's not. It's like if you can say speech impediment, you don't have one. If you can say rural, you don't live in a rural area.
Can I tell you the main word? It is a daily battle in my house that we have over pronunciation of a certain
recidivism.
Word.
Recidivism.
No.
Sadie's been arrested again.
Recidivism. How would you say the name of the sticky sweet substance that you pour over pancakes? What would you call that?
Syrup?
Syrup is correct.
Some people say syrup, though.
My wife says syrup.
Yeah, like a stirrup.
Yeah.
Like put your legs in the stirrups.
And it's very... We fight tooth and nail over this.
Yeah.
And I always tell her, hey, what's that country over there in the Middle East near, you know, where we have all of this unrest? Is it Syria? Is that what it is?
With a fringe on top?
I mean, like, obviously.
That's from Oklahoma.
And stirrups, or a stirrup, sorry.
Stirrups.
A stirrup.
Yeah.
Obviously has an I.
Right.
Like, with the Y, it's got to be syrup.
Syrup.
And I am going to the airwaves to make a stand.
Syrup, I think, is probably a very southern syrup.
What am I?
Well, I know, but I'm saying you're super educated.
Southern.
Right?
I'm southern.
You're southern.
Yeah, I mean, dude, I'm very southern.
But Laura's very educated too, and she's all about the syrup.
I don't understand why you're defending her, and
she actually makes a lot more money than you too.
Well, it doesn't take much, Johnny, to make a lot more money than me.
Oh, man. But, we call that syrup money. So,
she is smarter than me, and that's why this is offensive.
Yeah. Because maybe you're wrong. Have you ever thought about that?
Every day I think about that. And
because she reminds me.
But
just wanted you to
maybe you're wrong.
Open your mind up.
Have you thought about that? But I just go, to me, the Syria or stirrup examples, like there's so many examples of how this is not that.
Well, that's the English language, though. There's a million, though. It's like laughter and daughter.
Okay, but to your point then, find me one more example where S-Y produces syrup sound.
Okay.
Can you find one?
I don't think so.
You can't.
We don't have time.
We can't.
We had a pretty... You didn't give me time. You were just ready. Time's up! That's not fair.
Yeah, I always do that. Like, if we're in an argument, it's like, oh, yeah? When's the last time that happened? And she's like, well, I can't... Exactly. Like, you know, it's like, well, none of us could actually, you know, immediately pull out of thin air, things like that. But it's okay. John, I'm a bully is what that's what I'm
you
saying.
You are.
Like, wow.
You're grouchy, too. This, I've noticed, you told me that before we started that you're hitting a wall, like, at 2 p.m. now.
Yeah.
Which is a very middle-aged man thing to say.
Wow.
I just feel like I'm just tired all the time. I had 12 frappuccinos, and I just need a nap.
I had just had a diet. This has been going all day today.
Yeah.
I had a diet Pepsi.
Uh-huh.
With a hint of mango, by the way. Have you had this?
Wait a minute. Are you adding the mango?
No, it came that way.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's artificial.
What, it's mango. You think I was going to add a real mango to a Pepsi?
Mango syrup. Is that what it is?
Mango syrup. And so I had that, and then I was standing in front of the coffee pot, and Laura
goes... You think
it's
better if you don't add the mango? You think that makes it less lame?
I'm
not an idiot. I'm not adding the mango. I bought it that they had added. I searched it out in the store. I'm cool.
No, I'm just saying you're acting like Mango doesn't go with Pepsi, and I'm saying they produced the product, Johnny. So yeah, apparently someone on their marketing team.
They also made Crystal Pepsi, okay? Oh, they're like, you know what we need? Clear
you
soda.
You got to let it go.
We need cola that won't stain your colon.
But what, that was the coolest marketing campaign of all time.
It was.
What was the song?
Right Now by Van
yes.
Halen.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, clear Pepsi, that's why it took off. I mean.
You think? The yeah. song?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I sing, listen, that song.
Crystal Pepsi. They tried to bring it back a few years ago, and it just, people, they thought it was like a nostalgia. People don't want this. Mm-mm. They didn't. They were like, oh, we remember that. It was dumb. Mm. It's only good if it sounds like something you would use like a gag for somebody like, hey, have some water. And then you like, yeah, and then they drink it. This is cola.
Drink up, we'll tell you.
Aha! And then, yeah. Is this mango?
I had Sadie watch that scene of Dumb and Dumber. Yeah. She doesn't watch any of the movies that I think are funny, except Nacho Libre. She loves Nacho.
Did she like the scene in Dumb and Dumber?
No. I could barely get her to.
I think it's kind of, well, Curry likes that movie, which is why I love her. She likes that. She likes Tommy Boy. But there are definitely some movies that I love that she finds very, like, juvenile guy movies. Like, I don't think she loves Anchorman in the same way that I love Anchorman. Yeah. I think Ron Burgundy's a very, like, frat boy humor kind of a character.
Yeah.
He's very unaware that he's being very misogynistic and stupid.
Right.
And men find that funny, and women are like, no, I deal with that crap every day. It's awful. Right. You
know? The movie's making fun of him doing that.
Yeah. He's like an over... But I don't know, like, Michael Scott's a big goof and a stupid, like, politically incorrect person, and women seem to be, they think he's kind of charming. Because they kind of started showing the vulnerable side of him. They hatched out the character more.
Yeah.
As the seasons went on. But anyway, there are movies that are a bridge too far for my wife, where she's like, that's just stupid.
Yeah.
You know, like Johnny Knoxville.
Never watched
it. I don't want to say the title of those movies, but, because we got the...
Yeah, I don't, Sadie, like, I realized when you sent me that Princess Bride thing... Like, I several years ago tried to get her to watch Princess Bride, and that didn't work out.
She didn't like it.
Well, I don't think it ever captured her.
Okay.
You've got to understand, the movies, especially at that time, it was a while ago, probably.
Right.
Because I was young.
Yeah.
But everything is so quick to the punch.
Right. The pacing in movies is totally different than to now.
Yeah. And like, again, Nacho Libre, she'll follow that one. And it's got a lot.
It's a story arc.
Of exposition. Excellent. Yeah,
right,
like
there
it's
is.
It's building up, you know.
But it's, you know, Jack Black being silly and chubby and.
Right. He's still,
along the way.
Getting hosed off as a child, you know, in the very beginning. And there's always, there's enough comedy to keep you going, you know. But yeah, Princess Bride's like a long lead in to get to sort of the funny parts or the.
Yeah, the video that we're talking about, if you've not seen it, I won't explain all of it, but there's a video that Manny Patinkin, who played. Inigo Montoya in Princess Bride. So if you're like a Gen Xer or a, you know, from our generation, or even if you're millennial, that movie means a lot to people.
Yeah.
And there's a TikTok video of a woman trying to like reach out to him, basically saying, hey, I know that you have a TikTok and my dad just passed a year ago from cancer and I miss him every day. And he was a big fan. And that was our favorite movie to watch together. And she shares this. She said, I heard that this scene in the movie that you were channeling like your own like
grief
and anger about losing your own father. And I just wanted to know if that was true. And then like, so there's a video of Manny Patinkin, the actor, like being shown that video and he responds to her on a TikTok. So they're like side by side and he's responding to her and he just like is so empathetic and he's very moved by her story. And then he starts telling his story. It's one of my favorite things I've ever seen. Like if nothing else, like we know the internet's a cesspool.
Yeah.
Like, it's just completely irredeemable at this point. But when I see something like that, I'm like, I never would have experienced what I experienced watching that video if it wasn't for the internet. So there is some good.
Yeah.
Like, I was goo. I was gone.
I know.
And then I sent it to my wife, and then she was, like, in the bathroom. I could hear the text go through. And then there's this long pause, and I can hear the audio from it.
You're sniffling.
Oh, and I just hear her. And then she goes, what are you doing? Me and she's falling apart. It was just it's amazing.
We're all a little on the edge right now.
It is. So. And plus anybody that's like lost a parent or a loved one, like it was very like right, it just hit you right in the soul. You know? But it's also like seeing someone's humanity that's like a celebrity, you see them really grieve along with somebody.
Yeah.
Like he takes off his glasses and is wiping his eyes, and you're like, holy he wasn't like, I'm glad my performance meant so much to you. It wasn't that at all. It was very human.
Well, and he was also super humble about the Princess Bride.
Yeah.
He was like, you know, that is the little gift that just continues to give my entire life.
Right.
You know, because think about it. He wouldn't have probably had any other parts if that movie hadn't taken off.
Right. It's just that connection point and the fact that it meant so much to people. Like, I think that's interesting when you make something and then you just go on to make like 20 more things, but then one thing has meant everything to people. Sometimes actors and even musicians, if they have a hit song, they begin to like hate those things because it's like, look, I'm more than just this one thing. Like the guy that wrote the Pina Colada song. If you like Pina, can you imagine? Like that's what he's known for. So if he hates that,
if he hates Pina Coladas
and getting caught in the rain, but he's got to like pay his mortgage every month. So he has to play the Pina Colada song every night if he wants to eat. Like that's got to be a weird thing.
Yeah.
So to see somebody go, no, I'm super grateful for this thing.
It's great.
And again, it was a great thing that he made. So it's not like he's like, I was whatever. I'm the grape stomping lady forever. Right. It's not. It's a great thing that he was involved with. By the way, look up grape stomping lady. It's amazing. we're like sending people down the rabbit hole of YouTube and TikTok. But I thought it was so cool to see like somebody who, and again, he's not some super like megastar celebrity, but just someone who you see in a certain way and you just go, oh, everyone in Hollywood is probably this way. And to see him just be so moved by someone else's story and step outside of his own story for a moment. Yeah. And you just go, I want to like have dinner with this guy.
Yeah.
Like, and that just made me go, okay, well, the internet is, there's something good, you know.
I don't know. The internet, you know, we were talking off air a little bit. You know, the way my brain works, okay, as a leader or as a writer or whatever, is I identify all the problems and then I begin to organize them in the order of how we're going to solve them to move us forward. Same thing in my family or whatever. Like if we're having a rough time in a situation, then Laura and I will brainstorm what all is happening and we'll begin to make a plan to at least start addressing one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And when we get that out of the way, then, you know, you start moving. And again, it's not my job to fix society. Like, I understand that. But I think modern day, maybe it's pride, does bring with it this idea that surely we could all pick out, because things are so in your face. Like, surely I could name a bunch of things that, you know, are going on that need to change. Like, whether or not I can change them, but surely we can name them. So, obviously, I'm writing about social issues. I can tell you I think they need to change. I think that there's this obstinate way of thinking. There's this opposition-based way of thinking. There's this complete misinformation campaign. There's no, there's very little understanding of sources, of reliable sources, especially for certain generations, that anecdotal or spurious sources seem so convincing to them.
Right. More so than the news, because now we can just say, where'd you read that? Oh, New York Times? You can't trust them.
Right.
My cousin Larry.
Yeah.
He said, take goat dewormer or whatever.
Right. Yeah. That's happening.
Right.
Like, literally the goat dewormer. I'm very overwhelmed, and when I trace back, like, okay, because again, it's all about ordering these problems. If I reorder the problems, where I end up arriving to some extent is, and again, it's like an old man shaking my cane at the heavens or something, but it's not. But the internet is the vehicle.
Uh-huh.
It's the only way in history that this mass confusion and
like disinformation
outrage
campaign.
Yeah. And disinformation could all coexist and each have this amazing like energy that feeds the other.
Yeah.
And there's no like pipeline, because now the pipeline is so many pipelines, it's infinite.
Right.
There's no like
you
remedy.
Can shut off any.
Yeah, you can't shut it off.
Yeah.
You can't say, oh, I'm going to put this remedy into the pipeline and for once and for all,
right,
we're going to prove that this is how we end World War II. Okay, well, I don't like necessarily everything about that, but it's definitive. There are definitive enemies, definitive causes, threats. You know, like the threats now, you don't even trust one person's threat as another person's hero.
Yeah.
That's not a threat. That's what's going to save us. Like everything you go, oh my gosh, it really is like up is down, right is wrong, left is right, green is black. I mean, like everything is different to everybody. And I trace it to this. It really is. Gosh, now you're going to really roll your eyes.
Okay.
it's like the tree of knowledge of good and evil. It's like we get to eat all we want to from knowledge.
Yeah.
And God's super clear. It's not because God doesn't want you to have knowledge of good and evil. It wasn't because
we can't handle it.
He said, like, you're not going to be able to do this.
Right.
And we're engorging ourselves.
Yeah.
And there's fundamentally still believe what Adam and Eve believed. And that is that if I get enough of this,
right,
I could fix the problems, which is what God does.
Well, that's why you have people now thinking that themselves with a GED is smarter than an epidemiologist or, you know, somebody that went to law school. They're smarter. Yep. I mean, it started even like, I remember thinking like watching the OJ trial, which was the first like gigantic trial of the century. And you'd be like, why can't people just, and you realize that you're getting things that the jury is not even seeing.
Right.
But you're second guessing like F. Lee Bailey and you're second guessing Marsha Clark and Christopher Darden, who are the lawyers who are trying to prosecute this like clear cut case of murder. So much more DNA evidence than we'd ever had. But like the more information, it made it more confusing because they were laying like, mm-hmm, evidence on top of evidence. It was this mountain. And then you're like, how can this jury get this wrong? And then you look at it after the fact, they're doing like a weird, like almost like a autopsy of that case, you know, a post, whatever you call that, where you just like, they're dissecting it all. Now there's a podcast I'm listening to and they were talking about all the, like there was a grand jury that was originally like dedicated to this that was just scrapped because one of the 911 calls got out and they couldn't trust that the grand jury had heard it. So they just started over. And just piled back in, and you're just like, what an interesting little like footnote, because you're just watching on TV thinking like, I would have known better. Like, no, you would have known what they told you.
Yeah.
And you would have been confused by Johnny Cochran because he would have weaved his web. Like, we don't know what we would have done, but it's easy to think like, I would have figured this out. But like you said, like, more information is not always good. It's no. how it gets spun is what matters most, you know?
Yeah. There is a book coming out next year by...
called Not So Black and White.
Maybe you heard of it. Maybe not.
Here we go.
No, it's a book by a guy who's becoming a friend of mine named John.
Does he know that he's becoming a friend? Or
no.
Are you just like, I think this guy's going to become a friend?
This is going to happen, with or without him. His name is John Onwuchekwa.
Oh, yeah.
And he gave us an incredible endorsement for the book. And we... it's a really cool story. I think I can tell it. Because I don't really know. We were at the place when you are doing, like, writing the book, you think is the hardest part, and it generally is. But there is a whole marketing side after the fact that it's not a natural muscle for me.
No, especially as an introvert, you're just like, now I have to ask people to care about this.
And again, they asked me to write on the copy, and I generally, in talking to my marketing director at Zondervan this week about some things, and she finally said, John, none of us are going to be as deeply invested in this as you are.
Mm-hmm.
So if you need to, you don't need to feel bad. Like, if you want words on the website to change,
right,
you can tell us specifically which one. Because
yeah.
I'm trying to let them, I trust them. I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I don't
That's
have a,
hard, though. I remember thinking that when I was trying to do music, and I remember especially when I was starting comedy, somebody said that to me. They said, no one is ever going to believe in your dream as much as you do.
Yep.
And I was like, it almost like hurt my feelings to hear it. And I think about that all the time now.
Yeah.
Just, it's jarring, but it's like, you need that. You need that, like, grow up moment.
Well, you do. And then you own it. And yeah. You also, for those of us who need the approval of people, it's very hard.
Yeah.
You know,
you're like, why not?
Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, so one of those is endorsements. You got to go get endorsements. And endorsements don't, they say, affects book sales as nearly as much as you think they do. Like, if you see a big name in the front, it doesn't necessarily affect. So I used to freak out about endorsements.
Yeah.
Now I'm like, we really want it. Well, we had one. It was a really good one.
And it was me.
It was you, Johnny. But we changed your name to protect the innocent. No, we had Governor Haslam.
It's pretty good.
And it's a really good, because he wrote an incredible book. If you guys haven't read it, it's called Faithful Presence. And you can talk about a lot of the topics that we talk about on this show. Here's a former two-term governor, you know, who's speaking in a conservative, who's speaking from a very middle ground gospel centered place about the role of church in the public square, and talk about a guy's unique perspective. But what I love about the book is he models in his writing what it is he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard for me right now because the book I'm writing is very, or book I've written is very, it's gonna throw some punches, but I'm throwing punches, telling you not to throw punches. You know what I'm saying? Like I struggle with that tension. Like this has to be said,
right? That line between like activism and reconciliation,
right?
Yeah,
and I don't want people. I'm very sensitive about people not when part of the marketing language. I don't want this to be another a black friend and a white friend worked it all out,
right?
You know, so can you? You know, it's very like no. I believe in a collective removing of, it's as if we have this big wound, like this big vase broke on us and we're bleeding and we need to take each little piece of glass out before we could be healed. And so we can forgive. That's awesome. But we have to all be willing to go, oh, wow, 400 years of slavery. That's something I'm not just going to wrap up. Like the glass is still in there. If I don't humble myself and come to you and say, hey, I recognize that this hurts and this is your family history, that your last name is very possibly the last name of someone who by force enslaved and stole your ancestors and forced them into this. Like my last name is the name of my ancestors of whose line I come through. Like there has to be an acknowledgement of that. And so I'm always with that. Like, guys, please don't make this like that prototypical. If you want peace, you know, and right. forgiveness. And we talk about that, but we're going through the process. And so Onwuchekwa is this pastor in Atlanta who, if you've heard of him before, and I started following him about a year ago, whenever he was a part of, his church is a part of the SBC, and he wrote this big letter. They left the SBC just talking about the issues within that denomination, their unwillingness to really come, you know, excuse me, take some more steps to have these conversations.
Yeah.
That he just, you know, was very kind. He was very grateful and gracious about it, but they left and it kind of blew up that whole letter that he wrote. So we didn't really have, it was the week of Johnny and we had one endorsement. We had a bunch of people, I won't say who, that we'd gone after. And I don't mean a bunch of endorsements, but a couple of them that would have been, right. You know, names in this space, names who spoke into the racism conversation, especially from a perspective of a person of color. Like we didn't have the people. And the weird part of it, and I can't wait to talk about this story with him sometime. So a year ago when he made that post and I followed him, I noticed that his Twitter account said he's a 4 a.m. riser, like he's an early morning guy. He loves coffee. Sheesh. He said, loves coffee. They have this whole amazing coffee thing that is, it's called Portrait Coffee, and I hope you'll hear more about it, but it does some amazing things in the Atlanta area especially. But he said avid endorsement is what his thing said. Just kind of a funny thing.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So I direct messaged him and just said, hey, man, you know, appreciate what you're doing, what you're all about, all that. I was like, I just thought I happen to see this in your bio, and I wrote this stupid book called right. The Ultimate Guide for the Avid Endorsement. Could I just mail you a copy as a gift just to say thanks, you know, for being you, you know? He was like, yeah, great. Send me an address. I sent him a book. Never heard from him. That was it.
Yeah.
Here I am a week over, or really a year later, the week of no endorsements except one, and I get a package in the mail, and it says return to sender. A year later.
Wow.
I don't know where it went. Yeah. I don't know why someone picked it up and sent it back now.
Yeah.
It had been sitting somewhere in a post office thing, and I don't know why I got returned to sender. No clue. But it triggered my mind to John Onwuchekwa, and I was like, oh. And so I just took a chance, reached back out, said, hey, man, I sent a picture. This came back. This is crazy. You know, can I get another address? I'm really sorry. You never got the gift to try to send you. Also, can I tell you about this other book I'm writing?
Yeah.
I just was bold. He was like, yeah, sure. Tell me about it. Everybody says that, you know.
Right.
So I sent him an email or whatever. We kind of exchanged more information, sent an email. And he's like, yeah, I'll take a look at it. It was great. You know, I was like, okay, well, man, I was like, this deadline is on me.
Right.
I'm asking this guy, you know. So that Friday, I follow up with him. It's literally the day of the deadline. The deadline's Monday. And I'm sitting out and I ask, I send him one more reminder. Phone rings from Atlanta. I pick it up. It's John. And he was like, dude, I haven't even looked at it. I'm so sorry. I'm covered up. He was just super honest, you know. I said, that's fine. He goes, I said, can I tell you about it? He goes, that'd be great. Please tell me about it. So I took about 7 minutes.
Right.
And he knew who Reggie was and his, you know, and I just shared my heart on it, what it was. Some stuff I just said, like, hey, we're going through the hard, we're going through this, not around it, and here's how, and here's the history, and this and that. And we get to the end, and he says, John, this is the book I've been praying someone would write.
Wow.
I mean, he said that. And I know, I'm not afraid to say that, because that's what he wrote in his endorsement.
Yeah.
And he said, even, he's like, I can't share what some other stuff he said. I don't want to give the personal stuff. He said, yeah, I'm going to take this weekend. I'm going to read the whole thing because I want to endorse it. And he did. He read the whole thing and wrote this incredible endorsement. And it was literally because The Avid Endorsement was a book I wrote three years earlier. And it's just a crazy, crazy story. All that being said, John Onwuchekwa has written a book that comes out this year called We Go On. And it's got a lot of pictures and stuff and shares a lot of vulnerable stories in his life. But it's a journey through Ecclesiastes.
Okay.
So this is the tie back to our original conversation. Wow. I can't believe we got there. But he basically said, and I never saw this, that the writer of Ecclesiastes is super clear that we all really believe that more knowledge will somehow fulfill. But whether it was the preacher or Solomon or whoever you think that was, he makes it super clear, like, this is actually a well that you could dig as far as you want to, and it's not going to give you what you think it is. And it really hit me, not just in the information age, but in myself, and the first thing I did when I saw George Floyd was, besides cry and tell my wife I'm going to get it more involved, and I called Reggie the next day. The first thing I did was order a bunch of books.
Yeah.
Like, immediately I want to educate myself and get involved. And I think that's good, but I can't solve the issues of the world, even in myself, through knowledge. Like, knowledge, it's a deceptive thing, and we really think we can. I really think we instinctively believe that still through knowledge. Yeah. Even if you're not a book person, I think that.
Yeah, and also, I was just thinking, when you said the Avid Endorsement, like, I forgot about that, and you should have had, like, what were your endorsements for that? And did it say the Avid Endorsements for the Avid Endorsement? Because that, you missed a total opportunity there.
The Avid Endorsements.
Avid Endorsements for the Avid Endorsement.
Oh, my gosh.
Wait, what were you even thinking,
right? I wasn't.
Who endorsed it? Nobody.
Actually, I
have. You need, like, Tim the Tool Man.
Hold on, I'll tell you.
Tim Allen. You need that guy from Home Improvement. He would be a good Avid Endorsement.
I actually have the book right here.
He probably would do it.
I was mailing a copy to somebody.
Oh, well, I need to.
Yeah. I'm a pretty big deal. Ron Burgundy.
Oh, you've told me.
Here's the endorsement. First endorsement is from the International Society of Important Things.
wait a minute. This is a real thing?
It's right here in the book.
You wrote this, though. It's a gag. It's a gag endorsement.
International Society of Important Things says, this book is very important. next one was, come again. You want me to endorse what? Bear Grylls.
Okay.
You are very special to me. Please leave a message after the tone. Oprah Winfrey's voicemail.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. This is my favorite of all of them. I wish I would have had such a book. I wish I would have had such a book when I was alive. Winston Churchill.
Oh, that's nice.
I mean, he really.
He went all out.
He did.
Such an orator.
Finally, this is what I've all been waiting for. Brene Brown overheard as she reached the front of the popcorn line at the theater. This book is utterly ridiculous. And then in brackets, it says Lee well-written. And that is an unnamed, emphasis mine, unnamed publishing executive. And finally, the last one is Richard Hedgmonton, the world record holder for most books read. And his endorsement said, I've read a lot of books. So
that's nice.
Yeah. I mean, I can't believe that.
Those are all Avid endorsements.
And I'm telling you, and they, in this case, those endorsements did affect sales.
That's nice.
Just not in a good way.
No.
So, no, not at all.
In the same way that Coca-Cola affects your kidneys. You know, it's amazing I don't have kidney stones. Like, isn't that part of the deal? Like,
just don't give up, man. Like, you got to keep trying.
I think it's, like, genetic, though, too.
Yeah,
like, your
genetic
propensity for it.
Well, my brother-in-law has, like, at any given time, 15, 16 kidney stones floating around.
I remember I had a moment of, like, humility, though. I remember because our buddy, Royce Gray, who passed this year.
Yeah.
But he lived a lot longer than he should have because he had, like, kidney transplant surgery. And he lived, like, several more years after that. And, but I remember when I was with him in the hospital before he went and got his transplant, he said that he was on the list forever and he was waiting and he could have died. And then they said that a kidney was available. And I think it was like an 18 or 19 year old kid. It was like this huge moment and he get to the hospital. So he went in and I went in to wait with him. And he said, we were praying together. And he said, you know, I've been thinking about this kidney that came available to me and how it happened. And that this person basically like gave their, I'm getting a piece of this person. He goes, and I want to do everything I can to take care of it and honor it.
Yeah.
You know? And I was like, and I thought as I was leaving, I literally had this thought like, yeah, you better honor it. My gosh, you know, like you wrecked your kidney somehow and now you're getting this. Yeah. I was like, yeah, that's the bare minimum. And then I went and got a Diet Mountain Dew. Like it did not occur to me at all
that, yeah,
that I was wrecking my own kidneys.
You are an entitled kidney owner.
Yeah. I'm a Mountain Dew filter. That's all I am. Yeah. I'm just pouring and see what comes out. Let's see if anything granular's created. Jeez. Anyway,
yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
We miss you, Royce.
Yeah, we do. Royce is a great guy. Great guy. Speaking of the internet, though, back to that conversation, there is something we have not talked about in this podcast.
Okay.
And but mainly because I wasn't up to speed. My wife has been on me about this. Like, when are you going to watch The Rise and Fall of Mars Hill?
Listen to
so that we can write. No, I watch it.
You've got like a special.
I just stare at the icon.
That's interesting.
While I listen.
Just the...
And I'm in like episode, I don't know, 5, I think, maybe 6. And dude, it is.
I knew that it would be a huge thing. Which, you know, now there's the backlash to the backlash because, you know, for so long it went on and Driscoll was kind of left unchecked. And now there's this fallout and it's like, how could this have happened? There's the deconstruction of the movement and how it became what it was. And now there's the deconstruction of the deconstruction where we go, is this just, I'm hearing this phrase thrown around a lot on Twitter. I think we're getting too into failure porn. In other words, people are taking like, you know, Shout and Froud by seeing other people fail. And that's becoming like enjoyable for Christians and ex-evangelicals alike to watch someone's like complete, you know, dissolution of their ministry.
Right.
And we think of ourselves as better than them because, you know, well, I could never go. That's, but again, that's such a like, you're pointing the finger at sometimes at people who've been hurt. So what I took from it was, and the reason I knew you would like it, is like there definitely were some commonalities in what we grew up around. You wouldn't see like maybe this far.
Well, there's a lot of commonalities. Yeah.
But yeah, but then you also would see like, you see a piece of yourself in there too. You go, wow, this is like one of those things where this is what happens when power is left unchecked, you know, in people.
Right.
When you just go, oh, well, I'm sure he's got it together. Let's just let him have free reign or whatever.
I think I saw more of it in our young adulthood than I saw anywhere else.
Yeah.
Because all of our time in traveling and doing music and being backstage and kind of being the person that sometimes the power holder is hiring to assist with the power holder's event. And great guys in a lot of ways. Again, you have to preface all that.
Yeah, yeah.
But there was a... I don't know, there were some eerie things. And you're right. And here's the thing. If this whole failure porn thing, like you'd have to literally like defy what the producer and narrator is actually saying every episode.
Right.
You'd have to ignore it if nothing else. He's actually saying that this is what the story's about. And one of the things is what God did in all this.
Right.
And his sovereignty and the mystery of that.
Well, I hate that whole thing, too, of just taking someone who's deconstructing, for instance, and just putting all the onus on them that they're like, well, they're probably just lazy and they want like an excuse so they can lead a sinful life. And you're like, oh, they actually experienced a lot of trauma and it's caused them to question these linchpin ideas. And it's a result of trauma. But then rather than that, we just go straight to like, they just need to read their Bible and pray harder and figure it out. Like, they're just being lazy. It's like, that's such a very like victim blaming mentality. So I don't like that necessarily. There are examples of that, and I can if I'm searching my own heart, I can go, all right, Johnny, are you tearing XYZ apart because you want an excuse for your own sinful nature?
Sure.
Like, there's part of that in everybody, but this idea that we make this broad brush that like, oh wow, so a human leader falls and we just want to all pile on, and it's for our own like self satisfaction. No, I think it's important to look at these things. I think it's important to look at why Hitler came to power. Like, we wouldn't say that about Mussolini. Well, let's not get into everything. Look, he was a man and he made some mistakes and we don't want to glorify. Like, no, we need to know.
Right.
Like, how these things happen so we can keep them from happening again.
Well, because there's movements and there's people, and not just one or two. Like, and I think why this is important, and this is something we've been talking about, whether it's race or whether it's... church, and even Sarah Bessie, who was on the last one, she actually, like, there's something I want to write about. I've talked with some people about writing about, and I preach on it some, and that is this idea about the house built on the sand, there's a fundamental assumption it's a bad house. Like, my whole life, I thought of that as a bad house. And she actually said, I was like, oh, she's going to write my book now. She's already more popular. So this is going to be great. But anyway, what she's
you've managed to make it about
I
you.
I made this
which is
about
great.
Me, what I want to do. But no, she said, you know, this huge mansion built on sand.
Yeah.
And that's really the whole idea. Like, hey, it's super important because all the bigger the mansion, the more people who take shelter under it. Which means the more people are going to be hurt when it falls. Mm-hmm. And so it's not even about size or influence. It's about what is, and I think that's actually where the quote, I was asking where that quote came from, what we allow, you know, is what we accept. You know, we're accepting the things we allow. So there's some point in time when really like mainstream voices of reason and teachers that we respect in the faith are endorsing things that they don't do, but this guy's doing and they're endorsing because he checks a box or whatever. And it's whole.
Yeah. Many times the box is just charismatic personality or he says the things we're afraid to say.
Well, and there's a direct tie.
He's a great
there.
Speaker. That must mean he's a great leader.
Yeah.
Like somehow, I don't know where we make that jump, but it's just very easy. It's that celebrity culture.
Yeah.
We're addicted to celebrity culture.
So interesting. I was talking with a friend who has a pretty big podcast, and he told me last week, that the nature of what they do, they get fewer downloads when they bring celebrities onto their big podcast. That their audience really wants to hear just them do the teaching, coaching, leading with normal people.
Yeah.
Because the normal people are asking for that. So I thought that was a beautiful thing. I was like,
yeah,
wow.
maybe that's where we're headed. If you're into something deep, you're like, yeah, I want to hear from the people who are really like, know the science behind it, not just like, I wonder what John Mayer thinks about this. Like,
right.
You know? Because it's true. Like, if you really are digging into something, maybe you're interested in that a little bit. You're like, this would be interesting to know, like, what artist, you know, thinks they are and what they are. And that's an okay conversation, but yeah, if you're really digging deep, you want to hear the science and the
there's
the experts.
Yeah, there's a sense of I'm doing the work.
That damages us a lot, by the way, because we're not either experts or, you know, we're not experts at it and we're not celebrities. So it's like, why are you listening at all?
No one wants to hear. But it is. It's very like, what's my purpose for doing this? Is my purpose to be distracted by something or is my purpose to do work here? Mm-hmm. And I think it can happen, you know, anytime. And I've challenged some of our younger friends before and you know, they'll come with a, hey, I picked up this dirt in the Christian industry, you know, kind of thing. And I'm always like, that is very interesting, but I want to be super careful not to rejoice in the dirt. Like when you roll around in dirt for fun, you get dirty
That's
with them.
Tough,
you know what I'm saying?
And Nashville's a big prime
it's
spot.
It's hard
for
not
that.
To. Yeah. I mean, all around us, oh, did you hear? And we do the same thing as pastors.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not calling them on, you know, and I don't have to call them on that a lot or whatever, but that's happened before of I'm not even supposed to rejoice at the downfall of my enemy. You know, I'm supposed to pray for my enemies and love my enemies. And so there's that hard, I think right now it's super difficult. I'm going to say something that everybody's thinking.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Because that's the kind of leader I am, Johnny. It's charismatic. But, you know, I've talked to lots of people in private who are struggling mightily in the pandemic when someone who is fiercely opposed saying this is not real, when they actually get sick.
Yeah.
And it's not that anyone wants anyone around them to get sick, because we don't, and they don't. But for a second, for a split second, there's a sense of justice to it.
Yeah.
And that you have to immediately say, I cannot let that coexist with who I'm supposed to be in Christ. It has to be immediately eradicated. I can't give it room.
Yeah.
I can't. Like, giving that room goes against, by the way, how many of us have, however you feel about pandemic or vaccines, those kinds of things, we all have something that we've been wrong about.
Right.
And we may be wrong about 100 things on both sides of this equation, that God pursues us regardless of our wrongness is a part of the gospel. So there is a sowing and a reaping and all those things. There's wisdom and how wisdom plays out. I'm just saying there's that like sense of, I want people to get what they deserve. And people could watch, or excuse me, listen to Mars Hill and certainly be like, well, yeah, that guy.
Uh-huh.
And I think that would be the wrong way to, and I think that's not even the way that the producers are trying to take it. Like, this is about trends of how we all look at church or look at what we're doing in, mm-hmm. in God's kingdom in America. And I do think that there is a, what's the word she used? I think Bessie used, you know, there's an apocalypse, which we think means end of the world. It doesn't. It means revelation and apocalypse mean revealing.
Mm-hmm.
If that's a revelation, you reveal. So that means they saw something that, you know, was hidden or mysterious. So like there is a lot that seems to be being revealed right now. And that's a good thing, but it's hard when it means we need to address it. And I do think that men or women, but in this particular case, it's an evangelical church, men using church as a powerful tool to dominate others, even under the guise of protecting others. So basically like, hey, the only safe place for you from wicked, violent men is to be under the purview of good, violent men.
Right. Which we're seeing that. Yeah, we see that played out in gun culture. We see that played out.
Yeah.
The only way to stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. And that's true in some cases.
It is true
in
some cases.
In a lot of cases, it just means that we have the most guns per capita and the most gun crime per capita.
Hey, listen. If someone's breaking into my house, I want the policeman who's coming to help me come in. I want him to come in armed, too.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's there's a practicality to that that's true. It's the translation of that into spiritual culture.
Right, right.
And there is a warfare spoken of scripturally in spiritual culture. But it's when, and again, I just did the episode where, I mean, like, and I'm not going to be explicit as he was, where, like, he's taking Song of Solomon and other things mm-hmm. and saying, telling women to perform sexual acts on their husband in Jesus' name as a commandment.
Right.
As like a way to repent of your disobedience in this area.
And as a way to grow the church. It almost felt like a culty thing.
It was, yeah.
Like, and then next thing I know, her husband's in church the next week.
Oh, yeah. And the crowd is...
And they're laughing and you're clapping. You're like, this feels really culty.
And you and I have been in places where things like that...
Yeah. We have.
We're said.
And we felt uncomfortable, and we didn't say anything.
Well, that's not true.
Well,
we said stuff
saying,
to each other, and we eventually left. But
yeah,
was
but I'm
a
saying we didn't
of,
go to leadership and go, this is unacceptable.
Because
we don't have the power. There's no power dynamic.
Andrew and I talk about this all the time. You cannot have that conversation with those who think those conversations shouldn't happen.
Yeah.
Like, there, if you want to have an honest conversation with somebody that doesn't believe in honest conversations unless they're coming from them to you, then your bridge is only half built and someone's dump truck is going to fall off in the water.
Yeah, there's a podcast I'm listening to, and it's about, it's called You're Wrong About, and they dissect, like, basically big historical moments, and they talk about, like, how we misremember things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fascinating, and they do tons of research for every episode, so they're very well thought out. But they're talking about narcissism, and they're talking about, in particular, O.J. Simpson and people who, like, they convince themselves almost that, like he never even thought about taking a plea deal because he was like, I can't be guilty of this. I'm O.J. Like,
right.
And they were her argument, and it was very fascinating when you think about, you know, leaders we've had since then, not just O.J., but she was giving other examples. But she was talking about, we think of narcissism as this, like, almost like evil supervillain thing that the person who's being narcissistic is completely aware of and in control of, instead of it being this character flaw that sends them spiraling out of control, and they can't ask themselves the tough questions because it would mean an apocalypse. It would mean this revealing. It would mean this destruction of their complete, like, self, because they can't let themselves believe that they don't have the answers or that they're not the expert on XYZ. They're the final authority. So, like, yeah, when you go to approach an authority figure who's being a narcissistic leader, it's like you got one arm tied behind your back already, because not only are they not some evil genius, it's like a handicap. They don't even understand the machinations of it themselves, really. And I never really thought of it that way, but I was like, yeah, it's like, it's easy to be like, oh, this person's so wicked and they're narcissistic and they know everything they're doing wrong. It's like, no, it's way worse than that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they're doing damage untold, even to themselves, that is out of their control in some cases. Now, in some cases, you see narcissism that's like it develops over time and it's fed, you know, like an angry dog is just as fed and fed until they finally hurt people. But I just think it's easier to, like, paint this broad brush of, like, there's narcissistic people and there's non-narcissistic people, and we don't see it in ourselves, and we don't see it as something that we only see it as something like, oh, well, they're in total control of this. I don't know if that's true.
No, I don't. I think, man, it's fascinating because you, if the only thing that could help you is listening,
mm-hmm.
and the one thing you can't do is listen,
right?
Then you can't, like, you can't get past the problem. I think that's a little microcosm description of society right now, because it's not that I can't listen. It's that I can't hear certain things. If I think your viewpoint on race is CRT, then the moment I can hear that someone accused even of that, mm-hmm. even though honestly, I know very
few
people.
It's like a witch hunt. Yeah.
Very few people I know could give an actual definition of the people who created CRT,
mm-hmm.
what they intend for that to be and what it is. Okay.
Right.
I'm not speaking for it. I'm not speaking against it. I'm just saying most people don't really know.
Right.
It's just that it's just
they just know they heard it on a podcast and they've decided that it's the new sweeping like moral panic to
right.
get panicked over.
Yeah. But here's what I know. All someone has to do is say John's new book is CRT.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not going to, even though it's not, and we say we're not
right.
in the book, but it won't matter. They'll never be able to get to it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so pandemic, same kind of thing. If you at some point distrust all media outside of the one, you are listening to media somewhere.
Yeah.
And I'm on a mission for that. I'm really working on this idea of like, could you really get all of us, me and you included, take any given idea, take any given belief or a leaning that we have and basically do an inventory, like a written inventory of what all sources and people inform that's, it could be something simple. What a great exercise, but that simple belief, could I really trace it back to its origin?
Right.
They're not all bad things. They're not all good things.
Yeah. I think most people are scared to do that.
Something informs that.
Yeah.
Like I had a conversation this week with someone close and I just, from the last time we talked till now, I'm like, okay, that didn't all come from you. Like you're inflamed again over this.
Uh-huh.
What's in, like, I want to know.
What have you been watching?
Yeah.
What did you read? What did you hear?
And if the answer is Facebook, okay, where specifically, let's go back in your history. Let's build the blocks of this. And it could be leading to a truth. And again, it's an exercise we're afraid to do, as if when we do this, it's all going to be wrong.
Right, right, right.
You might, if
yeah, it could be that something was revealed and you're like, oh, I changed my mind.
If what you believe is true, then you should want to do this because only going to make it more true when you find out all the sources that inform that decision.
Well, some people think that never accurate. Changing their mind about something is an honorable thing too. And we grew up with that.
Yeah.
Like, he never wavered. And you're like, well, sometimes we need to waver.
We need to waver.
Well, you said that in a sermon one day, and I could see certain people getting uncomfortable. You said, when's the last time you changed your mind about something? And I could tell it made people itch.
Yeah.
Because it just it feels like you're getting ready to, like, you mean, like, change your mind about God
right,
or whatever.
Slippery slope, yeah.
And so people go to the umpteenth degree, but it's like, sometimes we do change our mind about something because we're given better information, and that's okay.
Yeah.
And sometimes we do need to, like, dissect, as you say, like, what's the deconstruction of this idea? Where did it come from? Are these reliable sources?
Yeah.
Or is this just somebody that's, like, making money to inflame me?
Yeah.
Like, literally, we're being our rage is being monetized by billionaires, and that should be the thing that enrages us. You know?
Yes.
And instead, we're mad at each other. We're not mad at the billionaires.
You remember the movie Monsters, Inc.?
Yes.
Like, it's very much, there was a, the thing that powered their society was fear.
Mm-hmm.
If you get the kids to scream, then it gives the energy.
Bro, that's a sermon right there.
It is. And that's what we're doing. If I can scare you or enrage you, I get energy from you in the form of, you'll be a follower of mine now. You have to keep coming back to me because you're scared.
Right.
You know?
And then I've got to keep you scared. So I've got to keep, like...
Yeah.
I got to keep spinning.
And the best way to do that is to make you afraid of someone or something. Like, right. I think I say in the book, like, hey, guys, I'm not a liberal, but you know the word can't actually hurt you.
Yeah.
Like this, like, oh, my gosh, you said liberal. Like, it's a real... Like, it's a little silly at some point as to act like that. these kinds of words, even these ideas, are like they're not a disease themselves that are going to overtake you and suddenly make you. I think I say you won't burst into flames of liberalism if you listen to viewpoints other than your own.
Why take the chance, though, John? Why take the chance?
And I just think that deconstruction here on the Mars Hill stuff is very interesting to me because
I knew you'd like it because it's not a takedown.
No, not at all.
But it's good. It's an entertaining show, the way they put it together with different voices, and it's just like the way they use clips. So it's very thoroughly researched. It's not just like, hey, this just happened and we're going to try to now monetize this situation by doing an expose of it. They took years to kind of get their thoughts together on it. And so you can tell. And you can tell that somebody's not like just like, I'm so happy to burn this guy. It's not about that. It's not about a vendetta.
No, because they acknowledge a lot of great things he did and the way he helped the poor and the way he gave himself and opened his home. And I mean, nobody's one thing. And that's the thing.
That's really hard to process.
It really
because
is.
Because we think of ourselves as being very complicated, and we don't think of other people.
Right.
That way.
Everybody else is one thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We want to boil everybody else down, and we want everyone to see us as a beautiful like flower that just has so many things going on. You have no idea what all I'm going through.
So many layers and.
But that guy's just a liar.
I'm a you know, guy. Like
he lied to me once. He's a liar. Aren't you glad you're not president?
I thought I'd take this chance to announce my candidacy.
John.
I know.
This is so neat.
I know. I'm gonna need
you know what?
Our Patreon.
You got a good chance because you're under 80.
That's true. I will, round out the, we're going to need our Patreon supporters to really step
it
up for this.
Yes. Yeah. Who wants to be that $1,000 champion?
I'm looking for that $2 million champion. help me get on the air in suburban Ohio.
I think we've got the listenership to mobilize...
Well, and I got a pretty strong platform. I don't mean like stuff I believe. I mean like here at the church, I've never fallen through it.
It's made of pallets.
Yeah, I remember when we built it. It's pretty strong.
That was a big thing for a while. Churches were just pallets everywhere on stage.
It's because they're free.
I guess.
Well, actually, they're not free, but you can
steal
someone
them?
At church.
You think? Okay, hold on.
Someone at church worked in a warehouse. Like, hey, we got these pallets.
That'd be weird. Like, what if you stole pallets to make your church?
What if there's a seedy underbelly of pallet distribution and people are just stealing them left and right and we're hanging them all over our churches?
And then we wonder why church attendance is down.
Oh, my. It's because a pallet fell
God
on somebody.
Can't bless it.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay.
It's because they fell through.
Now those pallets really are worth a lot because lumber cost.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
I don't know.
A sturdy foundation of
lumber costs coming back. Is pastor's house? Pastor's house going?
They're coming back. Yeah, lumber's descending.
Is that what it does? Lumber's descending from heaven. And you know, I beheld the wood. That's weird.
It's going. He's out there, man. It's going well. It's going
That's
well.
Good.
So, hey guys, we hope that it went well for you today.
We hope that you've descended
into the madness with us. I should check out our website, though.
Talk about that podcast.com. Archived episodes. Mm. If you want to binge listen, we know some of you are taking your last minute vacations.
Yeah.
As you're listening to this, I am.
On all expense paid quarantine.
I think I'm in Cancun. I may be stuck in Cancun if I get COVID there, but we'll see. It's going to be fun. If the next voice next week will be like a remote, like grainy, awful, then that's what's happening. I'm in a room. Waiting for my room service, and I'm stuck in Cancun for 14 days.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
It'll be great.
There's worse things out there.
A lot worse. Yeah.
Almost anything's worse than that.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
I'm telling you, I think I could use that extra vacation. So, hey, you should check out all of Johnny's comedy, though. It's worth watching.
Yes.
And you have a big show coming up.
Oh, that's right. Nashville, I am going to be at Zany's headlining. And this will be technically the first time I've headlined there. It's like it's a one-nighter. On a Sunday night, October 17th. And so, so I'll be headlining. And tickets are only $15. It's going to be great. So we want to fill it up. And it's limited seating, obviously, because it's just Zany's. It's, I think they're, 300 seat room.
So what are they? What do you call that, an A club?
It's definitely an A room. If you're a comedy, if you're a comic, you think about A room, B room, C room. And Zany's is like one of the top 10 clubs in America. Like, it's an amazing room. And it's a great club to have in your home city. So I work there whenever I can. I've worked there a lot more this past few months that we've been home because I get to go do like Monday night. They do this thing called New Material Mondays, and I go do that. Every now and again, I'll do a Tuesday night show there. But because of that, they asked me if I wanted to do a headlining night.
It's huge, man.
And so I'm excited about that. And so, if you're a fan of my comedy, I'll be working out some new stuff and doing some of the hits and all that good stuff. But I want to fill it up and – Please come. October 17th, so mark your calendars.
October 17th, we're asking our listeners,
yeah,
go buy a ticket.
Do it.
Go watch Johnny W. at Zany's.
Yeah, and you can find info on my website, johnnyw.com.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, it's exciting. Super, super proud of you. Excited for it. I hope you don't blow it. So,
thank you.
Wait a second.
It felt like a real coaching moment there.
Very honest. Very
don't
honest.
Don't screw this up.
Yeah. Hey, and head on over also to notsoblackandwhitebook.com and you can begin reading.
Pre-order that bad boy.
Yeah.
Be That's very big helpful. For John's numbers.
It gets, hey, as
you numbers, there's more to life than numbers.
Sure.
There's also there's cash.
It really does help, man. And maybe get some people around you. Like, hey, if you get them, hey, there's some guys, I like what they're talking about. There's a book coming out. Like, let's help build this momentum for this book release.
I think they call that a grassroots.
We do. Yeah.
We're very grassroots around here.
Mobilizing.
There's not some big, weird, autonomous collective out there, you know, in a nondescript gray government building, moving the weird levers, making this thing go. No, it's just us in a room standing in front of an audience asking you to love us.
Mike, I wish you guys could have seen Johnny acting that out as he was building the word.
It was a big sentence. I'm very proud of that.
It looked like you were on one of those ski machines with your arms there for a second.
I was on like an elliptical, but I was imagining it was, when the little guys inside the gigantic robot.
Yeah,
that's what I was imagining. That's not what we are. We're just two dudes.
We're not that at all. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what all Johnny just said we weren't, but I'm sure we are not it. So. No, it's exciting, guys. We appreciate you. Send us your questions, your comments, man. Leave us a review, and preferably a good one, and invite your friends and family to come join us next week on
Talk About That.
Is life feeling chaotic? I get it. I'm Rachel Wojo, host of the Untangling Life podcast. Don't miss the passionate encouragement and faith-based resources you need to help you clear your head and calm your heart. As Shell says, it feels like Rachel always knows what I need to hear. She keeps it real and is so humble. Her podcast is just the cherry on top. Enjoy Untangling Life with Rachel Wojo on lifeaudio.com or your favorite podcast app now.